Okay, so I want to carry on exploring Samadhi today. But before I start, is there any questions about what we've done so far or what you've tried out? What I'm hoping that you'll do is really explore how to put these, all this into practice. It's so easy to talk about stuff, but unless you really try and put it into practice in your unique mind, it doesn't really make much odds. Just to see. Yeah.
So when I'm sort of trying this thing out, when I first start, for the start of the practice, it's sort of very clear and very conscious what I'm doing. And then as the practice goes on, it sort of becomes a little less conscious, sort of a bit more, I don't know, intuitive is maybe the wrong word, but something like that. Which has its pros and its cons. So it's sort of easier to, like, it's sort of a more direct kind of thing, experience that's happening, but at the same time it's easy to get lost, because you can sort of, well, I find I can sort of just try and do, apply the things without thinking, sort of think I know what I'm doing and I end up off somewhere else. So, I don't know, part of me kind of starts resisting that when that starts to happen, when it starts to get a bit more deeper and a bit less conscious and stuff like that. Is that something that you should just sort of let it happen and just practice, or should you consciously come back to, you know, how you're doing it at the start?
It's very interesting, isn't it? I don't know. I think my experience is like yours, that it can go like that. And then it's not always clear whether I'm intuitively working or just going along habitual lines, if you see what I mean. And yet I think there is a movement from a rather overly self-conscious application of techniques, which I don't like very much, and you're trying to get away from that to a more intuitive, responsive attitude. It gets more and more difficult to say what you're doing, even. That's what I find. Some of the discussions around meditation, I don't understand why people are so clear about what they're doing. Sometimes it's quite difficult to say what you're doing, but you know you're doing something. But it's not always clear whether that's what's happening or whether you're just running down habitual lines. So what I try to do is I keep just stopping and looking for subtlety, just checking more subtly. The difficulty with working with our mind is that we walk through particular doors habitually in our mind, without really stopping to think, is that the door I need to work through? So I keep on trying to stop, and it's almost like you stop in mid-flow and just check that you're going the right way. But I think even that has to be done more subtly at that stage and more intuitively. It starts to get more and more difficult to talk about. One of the difficulties with teaching meditation, I notice, is that you have to teach it verbally, and then you try and apply that verbal attitude to your experience. And there, as you go deeper in awareness, that highly verbal, rather analytic attitude isn't very helpful. So I think it is working between it becoming more natural and naturalised, as it were, and then just checking that that's not just flowing off into habitual patternings, and they're difficult to spot.
And so the checking, would that be sort of the classic sort of checking for tensions in the body, or what, like noticing which direction your thoughts are going in, or?
Yeah, I think for me at the moment, particularly any kind of constriction, working with energy more, any sense of sort of blockage, constriction, unsmoothness, if you see what I mean, looking for all of those. It's much easier to read those than it is to see whether your mind's habituating, I think. That's what I've been doing anyway. Like today in my meditation, I didn't want to meditate. I don't know whether you ever have that. You know, you sit down, you're in the right place, you've slept all right, you sit down to meditate, you don't really want to do it. So what I always notice, because I then just think about poems, and I start writing them if I'm not careful. So what I had to do is really keep on coming back to the feeling sense of not wanting to do it. And it was quite, I couldn't really get underneath it. It was just, I don't really want to. All that, and I was trying to just feel that and incorporate that more and more. So it's actually quite, when you actually start to apply it, it's much more difficult to put into words. But that's what I do. I look for that. So I could feel it with a kind of resistance, constriction, and try and just sort of feel into that more and smooth that out more. But I think often we just don't notice it very much. I think I've meditated quite a lot, not really wanting to do it, therefore not really doing it, not really stopping and thinking, hang on, folks, I don't really want to do this, so let's work with that directly. To me, it's very easy just to sort of just avoid those issues and then sort of bumble along, hoping vaguely that something will happen. Sometimes something does, but... So I'd look for any kind of constriction, any kind of blockage, look at your energy levels, all of those sort of things. I'll say more about that later.
I'm interested in relation, everything you said, in relation to two things, the meditation object or subject.
Yes.
And purpose. Because unless I relate all the material you're talking about to purpose and the object, it could be another version of just tweaking
your
consciousness.
And drifting about,
And it's like, well, I mean, for me it's very, very important to establish purpose.
Yes, that's
in
right.
Meditation. And you said at the beginning of your yesterday that you can bumble around and I just wondered if there's a, perhaps it's just one of those things you can't answer, but is there a tension, do you think, between the object and the purpose, the overall purpose of your meditation, and looking at all the different instances in your mind?
Yes, it makes me wish I hadn't asked for any questions. I can't answer them, it's terribly embarrassing. No, I think you're right, there is a tension between purpose and exploration. You said something about purpose and the other, what was the other?
Well, the meditation object.
Object, yeah.
I suppose it brings up the question of interest in the
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Purpose, desire.
Yes. I mean... with the question around object is slightly easier, so that all of these sort of approaches, that they can be something that you're bringing into the background with the object. So if you think of the object being in the foreground, the breath or the metta, but you've got this a stronger background sense of the whole body. Today I want to go a bit more into pleasure, for instance. Looking at the relationship between the object of metta and pleasure, or the breath and pleasure. So I think that's more straightforward, that you've got this kind of primary object in the foreground, but your attention is moving between a foreground object and a more background thing of the whole body, all these sort of constrictions. Some people tend to just fix on the foreground without much background. Some people seem to mainly have so much background it doesn't have a foreground at all and doesn't really go anywhere. And it ends up being this kind of bumbling around, not really doing very much, not really emotionally committing to it. For me, the purpose is to have a religious experience, basically. That's my purpose of meditation. One of the funny things I find tricky sometimes about meditation teaching is it can sound so technical, which for me just turns me off. I think some people it's useful and helpful. And there's nothing wrong with technique, as long as it's taken up in the right spirit. But for me, I find it a turn-off. I want a religious experience, which is, for me, meeting Padmasambhava in my case, or at least getting closer to that. For me, everything's trying to go behind that purpose. And when we come to talking about spiritual rebirth, very, very difficult to talk about because it's unwilled. But for me, that is the purpose, is to have a religious experience, not a, not a technical one. I think there's more to say about that, but I can't think of anything. Could anybody ask me any easier questions?
Just something to drop into your mind, I meant to mention it this morning, but making the connection between meditation, going for refuge.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which, well, I think you should come next year and do a retreat called Meditation, Going for Refuge.
Yes, that'd be good. Isn't it?
Just
that's
it.
I mean, you are looking for a religious experience, aren't you? You're looking for something numinous, something you can't really very easily verbalise. The deepest experiences I've had, which feel most valuable, I couldn't make into a meditation teaching thing. So I think it's very important to kind of keep that in mind. I mean, sometimes what I've been doing with spiritual death is setting up my sadhana first and then looking at, then going from there to spiritual death practices. Just to set that up in a way. The main thing is to really experiment with that. Really experiment with how do you deepen your mind so that you have a religious experience. I like the word religious rather than spiritual now, though. I'd like to say I'm religious but not spiritual. So I'll sort of close the questions. Yeah, perhaps when I say questions, what I mean is like really easy ones that I can answer, and then you think I'm like really good meditation teachers. I should have made that clear, should I? Sorry about that. Yeah, so questions are good. I'll perhaps suggest some questions for later, because I've got some really groovy answers for some of them. Yes, so what I was saying yesterday is that the main thing that stops us getting into samadhi is any experience of tightening, constriction, blockage and so on, resistance. All of those sort of things are what stops us getting into samadhi. Just to remind ourselves of context again, we need to keep doing this, which is samadhi basically is the completion in meditation of the first two great stages of the path. Of integration and positive emotion. Samadhi is primarily an experience of harmonious unity, isn't it? Saturated by positivity, except that positivity is too weak a word, too prosaic a word. So when we talk about samadhi, what we're talking about is in the meditation, deepening, enriching those two great principles that we're trying to practice in life. Integration on one hand, unification on one hand, and positivity on another. So all we're trying to do is intensify what we should be trying to do outside all the time, in our generosity, in our mindfulness practice and so on. Yeah. That's why to go towards sadhana you need samadhi. You need that kind of mind that's unified, integrated, whole, harmonious, positive, especially Shraddha, which I'll come on to later. So one simple way is to keep on looking for any sort of tightening, gripping, resisting, aversion, those kind of things, blocking, really sort of looking for that, and how you look for it needs to be subtle. I experience it like I practice meditation, I go forward and then I reverse a bit and just check if there's any kind of tightening and try and work with that directly. I think a good way of talking about it might be that you're working with your subtle body. At first it's just sort of relaxing your physical body, but then you're working with your subtle body, which is much more like the space of awareness that you sit in when you close your eyes, which includes sound, thoughts, body sensations, memories, the whole thing. You're working with that as a subtle body, trying to see where you hold, grip, and so on. Yeah. And as I said, one simple way of doing that is to keep stretching your awareness out to include the whole space of your awareness. Yeah. including sound, including body sensations. Really keep stretching it out. It's like making a pizza base. you kind of dough it a lot, don't you? And you flap it about and you stretch it out. So that I was watching Glenn make it one the other day. You flip it about. It's very graceful if you do it beautifully. I don't think I've ever done it before. you just keep on drawing your attention out into your whole body. Tuning into the frequencies of your energy in the body. Sometimes it's much better to just think of your in terms of energy rather than, like if there's pain, for instance, try and tune into the energy of that rather than your belief in the anatomical issue. Just tune into the energy of it. Feel the energies in your body. For instance, even when you think about your feet, it's very easy to think feet or have a mental image of your feet. Actually, what you experience is sort of energies. Very slightly difficult to talk about because when we talk about things, we create images and words. So try to really feel the energy in your body and where that energy is constricted. Where you're gripping onto it. Yeah? So, you might, for instance, check into there'll be unpleasant frequencies in your space of awareness of, discomforts and so on. Try to feel those as closely as possible. Check if you've got aversion to those. Then you've got pleasanter frequencies in your body. Feel into those. And then you've got these neutral elements. So that's all, your Vedana. Really just sort of open out into all that. Yeah. And keep stretching. So what you do, you keep stretching your awareness to cleave your whole body and letting all of those pleasant, unpleasant, neutral Vedana just be there, just be arising and passing. I'm trying to think if I've got anything more to say about that. Don't think so. So really, we'll just do another meditation. Let's do the mindfulness of breathing again, just for the sake of it. See whether you can play with having the breath in the foreground, but more background awareness of your whole body. Or if you want to, see, you might move between focusing like that, but then having periods where you just focus on stretching your awareness out to include your whole body. Or if you want to, just use that as your practice, that your focus is stretching out your awareness to include your whole body all the time. Looking for subtlety, looking for subtle holdings, grippings, blockings, and so on. Start to educate yourself in that way. And keep stretching your awareness out. Yeah. So discover what works for you now, yeah? Which will be different to what worked for you this morning, different to what worked for you yesterday. And then I want to take us up further than that. So let's do this first. Okay, so let's take it another step if we can, and then do another meditation. I mean, in my meditation just there, I noticed that, again, how important ethics are. Because what I noticed when I sat and closed my eyes, as I suddenly remember something I regretted. And then, of course, as soon as that, you tighten up again. So every time your conscience is pricked, the space of your awareness sort of tightens. So I was struck by that. Also, just to point out that I was also feeling a bit dull. Dullness, tiredness, lethargy is also a kind of constriction, a kind of heaviness and pushing downness. So look out for dullness. The constricting tendency of dullness tends to pull all the energy in and down. So look for that constriction. Look for the constriction of agitation. That's a kind of constricted. You can feel it's a weird kind of constriction, because it sort of constricts and yet sort of fighting against the constriction. Yeah. So look for that constriction. So that all the Nirvanavas, I can never get it right, Nirvaranas, it's the V that I put in the wrong place, Nirvaranas, they all constrict, yeah? Negative mental states constrict, and we've known it right from the beginning, and you're trying to actually feel that constriction, work with it outside of meditation by practicing the precepts, and work with it inside meditation, at least in this way of approaching it, by noticing the constriction, trying to soothe it all out, calm it all out, comb through it, as I was saying, really tune into the energy of constriction. And I think it's best to work energically, feel the energy, feel where it's constricted, see if you can calm it out, calm it down, soothe it out. Yeah. So it's like combing through those constrictions. So the next step I want to talk about is then moving into pleasure. So samadhi is a harmonious, unified state of complete relaxation, complete energy, freedom of energy. So samadhi is also very, very pleasant. So we need to start to look for pleasure in our experience. So I want to say a little bit about this, and then we'll try and apply that in the meditation. So again, if you imagine, I don't know, you're either doing the mindfulness of breathing perhaps, and you've got this background awareness of your whole body, or you're doing the metta bhavana, and you've got this background awareness of your body. Or you can just be trying to stretch out your awareness to include, to feel your whole body. But doing that, you're not just sort of half pie doing that. You're making that your objective, is to stretch out the awareness of the whole body, not just sort of tinkering around. And then what you notice is that you've got unpleasant sensations. You've got pleasant sensations, and you've got neutral sensations. I think much more of our experience is neutral than we care to admit to. A lot of meditation is about bearing neutrality, feeling neutrality, not trying to push it away or make something take its place. So then what we try to do is, first of all, not make sure we're not feeling aversive to negative, to painful experience, to uncomfortable experience. And remember, aversion to discomfort can be a very settled habit that you just sort of instinctively stand against yourself, as it were, stand against particularly pain in the body or fearful narratives or whatever happens. So really trying to notice subtle aversions, trying to calm them down. As I said, I have quite a lot of discomfort when I meditate, as many of you probably do, and I have to really watch for subtle aversion just creeping into that. So without trying to push away uncomfortable sensations, in fact, our attitude to uncomfortable sensations needs to be as if they're comfortable. As soon as you notice pain and feel aversive to it, the science of it apparently is that you sort of switch on a kind of alert mode in your mind that tells you you're under threat. I mean, a lot of what you're doing with discomfort, whether it's emotional or physical, is working with the threat sense of it. You feel threatened by pain. You feel threatened by a fearful thought of something I'm doing 2 weeks' time which I'm worried about. You're threatened by somebody thinking that someone on the retreat doesn't like you. It's the threat sense that tightens you up. So you're trying to look for a subtle sense of feeling threatened. Weirdly, that can be by your own thoughts. If you tend to feel low if you tend to a sort of depressive mind state, which certainly I have done. It's typified by sort of harshly critical mental thoughts, you know, what's wrong with me? I was fine a minute ago, I'm not now. Oh no, I think I'm getting low again. And what that does again is it tells your brain that you're under threat. And apparently your brain can't tell the difference between an internal threat, like why am I not happy, or an external threat, like some threatening person standing outside the shrine room sort of thing. Your mind can't tell the difference, yeah? You basically just feel under threat. So, and again, that threat sense can be just you just feel constantly sort of threatened. And to see how that's going to stop you being able to go into samadhi. So look for any very subtle sense of feeling threatened. And again, you're just trying to calm it all down, soothe it all down. So without trying to push those uncomfortable or neutral Vedanas away, start to tune into any frequencies of pleasure in your experience. It's important to do this without A, pushing uncomfortable feelings away, more or less consciously, or B, trying to grab at pleasure, which doesn't work, it just means it goes away. It's much more like you're, again, broadening out your awareness. Keep on moving from the focus to breath, as we might have talked about it before, another way of talking about it. Trying to feel all that through, and some of those sensations will be pleasurable, even if only very vaguely, subtly pleasurable. So, you know, often, for instance, just like the warmth in my hands, or sometimes I'll actually take off a jumper so that I can put a blanket around me. I quite like that sense of being swaddled, as it were, in blanket. And it's just sort of slightly pleasurable to be sitting in a room with a blanket around you. So you just tune in to that very subtle, pleasurable sense. Any sense of comfort, any sense of ease. And that comfort and ease can sometimes arise quite naturally from not acting aversively to your experience. If you can, often it's waiting with uncomfortable sensations long enough for the aversion to sort of die down to them as you approach, go right up to them. And sometimes quite naturally a little bit of ease starts to arise. So you just gently, non-grabbily, dreadful word, tune into the pleasant spectrum of experience, much of which will be very, very subtle. Yeah. And see if you can stabilize that sense of pleasure. It's again, stability is what's so important in samatha, in samadhi. Finding this kind of stable, harmonious, unified, pleasurable state, yeah? Which you just want to melt into more and more. Yeah? So, see if you can just keep on tuning into this subtle pleasurableness. Yeah? It's lovely having those settees in the lounge and the fire on. I was watching this morning Canute reading, lying out full out on the one that said, that's what you're looking for, that kind of, yes, they do lie on the sofas. You do take full use of as much, you know. You're trying to look for that, I'm all right, there's no threat, nothing to be slightly guarded against. I can just sort of gently tune into pleasure, and then just try and stay with it as much as you can. The trouble is, you try to stay with it too much, it goes away. If you don't make enough effort, you just bumble about in this half-committed way that so many of us probably are calling meditation. Try and tune into the pleasurable sensation, see if you can stay with it. And yes, look for subtlety and pleasure. And then once you start to feel that it's more stable, the sense of pleasure, even if very, very subtle, there must be some element of pleasure. Just being warm is slightly pleasurable. Not having to do things. Sometimes the quiet in the room is rather pleasurable. It's been actually the meditation, you can feel, can't you, that the people in the room are working in the meditation. It's got a particular atmosphere. You can almost, you know, dip your finger into the atmosphere. So tune into that. You sort of need to look, but not look too hard. Otherwise, you sort of spoil it. You need to learn the art of pleasure, really. So once you stabilise that pleasure, see if you can find ways, and again you need to experiment, with having that pleasure suffuse more and more of your body. So what you've got here, what really I'm going through, is a kind of three-point training and pleasure. Firstly, tuning into all of the Vedana experiences you're having, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, letting them be there, fully experiencing them, turning towards them, and so on. Secondly, tuning in, consciously tuning in to the pleasurable spectrum of those Vedanas, even if they're very mild indeed. And then thirdly, after you've stabilised that a bit, see if you can find ways of having that pleasure fill more and more of your experience. Yeah? And if there isn't pleasure there, it'll mean that there's gripping, tightening, aversion, threat there. So you'll need to work more with that. Yeah. So what you might do, for instance, again, is use the breath as a way of breathing into the pleasant sensations. And even the intention of the breath opening up the pleasure so it can sort of fill the body more can start to have an effect. Or you just sit with that pleasure, being aware of that pleasure in an open way and trying to include more and more of other Vedanas as well, so this whole body sense. And sometimes just that will mean that gradually the pleasure starts to fill more and more of your experience. Yeah? Of course, be really careful again that we don't mix up this with craving. Otherwise, you just get into just a craving for more pleasure. What you're wanting in samadhi is to be suffused with pleasure. But trying to crave for that just stops it. Yeah. So you're also trying to be content with the pleasure you've actually experiencing, not wanting it to be bigger, stronger, more, and so on. I remember a while ago I was on an intensive meditation retreat with Yonavacha. He was sitting next to me, and I just had lots and lots of pain. You know, I kept thinking, oh, and we're trying to get into contact with pleasure, and I just had lots and lots of pain, trying not to react to it, trying to soften to it. Yeah, I feel threatened. Yeah, I still feel threatened. It's horrible, you know, and all that sort of thing. And then, you know, at the end of the meditation, I'd look around, and Yonavacha would be glowing with bliss. You know, I felt like going, so it's very tempting to sort of want Yonavacha. We'd go to the shrine together and he'd be like, you know, sort of, you know, oozing Shraddha, and I'd be oozing the opposite. So really try to think, okay, I'm just trying to work with what's happening. As long as you know that what you're trying to get to is a body and a mind and a heart suffused with pleasure. So, for instance, you might try bringing, an obvious way of doing this is to either be doing the metta bhavana practice, more or less with the stages, but up to you, or just bringing in metta. At best, metta and pleasure fuse together, don't they? It's very difficult to say whether you're experiencing metta or pleasure. So you might just bring to mind, one of the ways you could just gently encourage pleasure is just bring to mind someone who just bringing them to mind brings you pleasure. I remember when I was at Gukiloka last year on the course, you know, just trying to meditate, and then for some reason Banta came to my mind. I thought of this funny story As soon as I thought this funny story about Bhante teasing me, I just felt all this pleasure suddenly release into my body. So sometimes you can just bring a sort of ethically sort of beautiful memory to mind, which brings pleasure into your experience. If you do it too consciously, it doesn't work. If you do it too unconsciously, it doesn't work. Difficult to say how you do it, but anyway, have a go. So you need to experiment with ways, and how do you settle more and more into experience, feel the whole range of your experience without feeling threatened by discomfort, which means treating it as if it's as if it's comfort, which means going towards it, relaxing into it, softening into it, as if actually the discomfort is comfortable and you want to feel it. And then that tells your mind that you're not under threat anymore. You apparently, the science is that you go into this sort of welcoming mode in your mind. It tells your mind that it's not a threat. If you treat it as a comfort, your mind stops turning on this aversion threat response, yeah, which keeps you agitated, keeps you tense. Look for pleasure subtly, and then see if you can let this pleasure spread. Find ways, creative ways of doing that. The most important thing is not strength of pleasure, but stability. Yeah. So if you have bliss, you know, good for you. Very good. If you don't, don't worry about it. It's the stability of pleasure that deepens the practice, and not the hit of it. Any questions about that before we do it? Fairly straightforward.
Just an observation. I suppose I find that just the idea of working in meditation is pleasurable in itself.
Right, yes.
And the idea of generating interest in something.
Mm. Yeah, that can be pleasurable in itself, can't it? A bit like being in a library where you have that lovely atmosphere of people doing something valuable.